Hello, and welcome to this podcast from the Oxford Institute for Energy Studies.
Welcome to the latest Oxford Institute for Energy Studies podcast. My name is David Ledesma, and I'm Distinguished Research Fellow at the Institute. It's my great pleasure to be joined today by Bassam Fatou, who's Director of the OIS, and we're here today to discuss the current oil market and some of the key messages from the OIS's recent Global Oil Markets Update for the second half of 2023 that was published by the Institute on the 11th of August. Now, just to timestamp this podcast, we're recording it on the morning of Monday, the 14th of August, 2023. Bassam, welcome back to the OIS podcast series.
Thanks, David, for having me.
Now, Bassam, in recent weeks, we've seen some upward movement in the oil price, and prices seem to really gain some momentum. Now, could you perhaps tell our listeners, you know, what factors could explain these recent movements?
Well, after getting stuck around the $75 price range for a few months, Brent seemed to have found a new range around $85 per barrel. And few factors could explain the recent breakout of oil prices towards this new range. To begin with, Saudi Arabia voluntary cut of 1 million barrels per day announced at the last OPEC meeting started taking effect in July. Since then, the Saudi voluntary cut was extended for the months of August and September. And Saudi Arabia announced recently that this cut could be extended further and even deepened. Also, the recessionary fears have somehow receded, and forecasts are pointing towards better global growth prospects than anticipated at the start of this year. Also, inflation pressures have eased all over the world. And while central banks may still hike interest rates, there is a wide belief that the tightening cycle is coming to an end. And this more positive macro picture has been reflected in oil demand revisions. In our latest oil monthly, we revised our oil demand growth upwards for 2023 to 1.9 million barrels per day. This is 200,000 barrels per day higher than our forecast at the start of the year. Also, David, the disruption of the Libyan production for a couple of days and drone strikes on Russian oil tankers reminded the market that geopolitical disruptions remain a high risk. Having said all of that, China remains a key source of uncertainty. Following the lifting of the pandemic restrictions, many analysts projected a very strong rebound in China's growth. And actually, this was one of the key factors behind their predictions of above $100 per barrel at the start of the year. Now there's a recognition that China's growth will be slower than was originally anticipated. And although this will push the Chinese government to introduce stimulus measures, the scale of any stimulus packages and their impacts are likely to be limited, especially given the debt problems that local governments are facing. Having said that, China's oil data have been generally very positive, with refinery runs and crude imports rebounding strongly in the first half of 2023. And in fact, in our latest monthly, China's demand growth outlook was revised upwards. But the key uncertainty now is whether this strength in oil indicators in the first half of the year will continue into the rest of 2023 and 2024.
Now, so, Bassam, is the recovery in oil price concentrated in one specific segment of the oil market, or is it kind of more generalized?
Well, even before the additional Saudi cuts started taking effect on physical balances in July, the impacts on the markets were already being felt. And this was reflected more in the physical differentials, especially for the sour crude market. The Dubai benchmark, which represents sour crudes and Gulf trade, strengthened, and Dubai traded at a premium to Brent. And recent data show that October Dubai contract is trading at a large premium to the December contract. And usually this is a sign of a tight market. Also, some of the differentials of the Gulf crudes, such as Oman, continue to strengthen, despite the fact that at one point Oman was heavily sold in the Dubai window. Even in the US, sour crude such as Mars saw their differential strengthen to levels last seen back in the first half of 2019. And it really was a matter of time that this strength in the sour crude market was transmitted to the whole oil complex, with light sweet crudes becoming more attractive and refiners started bidding higher for light sweet crudes. And this was helped also by falling rates, which opened the arbitrage to Asia. And perhaps this was most evident in West African crude exports. West African crude export to Asia increased from around 1.4 million barrels per day in April, the lowest level since 2013, to around 2 million barrels per day in June. And this helped support West African crude differentials. Also, with the narrowing of the Brent-Dubai spread, U.S. crude spot cargo started looking attractive, and U.S. export to Asia have been also on the rise.
Now, it seems to me that in addition to price movements, you know, we're continuing to see massive shifts in crude oil trade flows. So, you know, what have been the key trends, particularly concerning Russian crude oil exports?
After the full enforcement of the EU and G7 embargo on Russian crude and product imports, we have seen some very interesting shifts in trade flows. On the crude side, Russian crude exports in the first half of this year average higher than last year, with India and China accounting for 90% of Russian crude exports. India in particular has increased its share of Russian crude imports from almost zero pre-war to around 2 million barrels per day in June 2023, and now accounts for 45% of the country's total crude imports. In fact, India's refinery runs have been at all-time high due to strong domestic demand, high product exports, but also due to discounted Russian crude, though these discounts have been narrowing recently. Also, from China, China's seaborne imports of Russian crudes have also jumped to record highs in the first half of this year, reaching around 1.45 million barrels per day in June. Now, of course, to replace the loss of Russian crudes in European markets, exports to the EU from the US, the Middle East, and West Africa have been on the rise. US crude exports particularly have been faring very well in Europe, and this year reached an all-time high in March. Also, the high prices of sour crudes, such as GS in the North Sea, are pushing European refineries to switch to sweeter grades such as WTI. And I would say also the inclusion of WTI into the Brent benchmark is also making the flow from the US into Europe easier. So David, really massive transformation in crude trade flows. And in a way, the oil markets have adjusted well to the Russia-Ukraine war shock. But of course, this has come at some cost. The trade routes have become longer, supply logistics more complex, the markets have become more segmented and less transparent, the price discovery, especially for sour crudes in Europe, more challenging, generally the optimization of crude oil trade more costly, and refineries in the EU have been relying more on sweet grades, which is changing their refinery yields. And of course, the freight industry have come under strains as trade routes become longer and shippers have been forced to find new ways to finance and insure oil cargoes.
Okay, Bassam, now, what about Russian exports of petroleum products, such as diesel and fuel oil? Now, how's that kind of played out? Because many expected that those trade flows would be kind of more difficult to redirect.
Very true. But even on the product side, David, we have seen Russian exports now finding new outlets in Asia, particularly China and India, but also in the Gulf, Turkey, Brazil, and North Africa. And the discounted prices has provided a very strong incentive for countries to import more Russian products. And this discount somehow more than offset the increased costs of transportation. One Russian export product that has been faring particularly well is fuel oil, where shipments to India, Singapore, China, and Malaysia jumped for use in power generation and bunkering, but also as a refinery feedstock in China. And similar to crude, David, loss of Russian products in Europe has been replaced by increased exports, particularly from the Middle East, Asia, and the US. And nowadays, Saudi Arabia, India, and the US are the EU's largest diesel suppliers from outside Europe. And particularly interesting is Kuwait's rising exports of jet fuel to Europe with the ramp up of Al Zour refinery.
At the start of 2023, with the EU embargoes on Russian products coming into effect in February, one of the key concerns was that Europe may face a diesel shortage or even a diesel crisis. How did this play out, Bassam?
Well, before the EU embargo on Russian products came into effect in February of this year, Russia was a major exporter of diesel to the EU, exporting around 500,000 barrels per day. And after the embargo, Russian diesel flows into Europe almost ceased just in the first half of 2023. exports of Russian diesel to the EU averaged only around 60,000 barrels per day, or about 5% of the total European imports. You are right, David. There was a view at the start of the year that this will pose a serious challenge or even a diesel crisis in Europe. But the impact has been more limited due to a number of reasons, I would say. Before the imposition of the embargo, traders scrambled for diesel and diesel stocks increased rapidly. Also, diesel flows into Europe from the Middle East, Asia, and the US increased. And there have been also larger export quota for Chinese refineries towards the end of 2022. And as a result, China's diesel exports also increased. At the same time, EU diesel demand took a hit as economic activity slowed down. And as a result of all of these factors, rather than diesel prices increasing sharply, as was projected at the start of the year, we saw general weakness in the diesel complex. Although diesel stocks did deplete over the winter, European diesel stocks remained higher than a year ago, despite the loss of Russian supplies. As an example, ending June 2023, middle distillate stocks in Europe were higher by some 25 million barrels than back in June 2022. But David, more generally, this shows few things. Of course, first, that oil markets are deep and mature and can cope with massive disruptions. But also new patterns of trade in products are emerging, and I think this will have long-term consequences. Basically, Europe now has to rely on new supplies from further away places. Journeys can now take 5-6 times as long as on routes from Russia, and this means that these supplies come at a premium. Also, these external suppliers to Europe have the ability to arbitrage between markets. So when the arbitrage is open, Asian and Middle East refineries will send diesel to Europe, and when it closes, they will direct it somewhere else. And given the uncertainty in demand and the longer time lags involved in transporting diesel, we could see periods where stocks build fast, putting downward pressure on prices when arbitrage opens. And when this arbitrage closes, stocks get depleted, and this will put upward pressure on prices. So for instance, currently we have seen upward pressure on diesel as supply tightened, with low sulfur gas oil future reaching above $900 per ton.
Now, Bassam, let's shift the conversation for a minute to kind of to the demand side, and particularly to China, which you referred to earlier on. Now, how has China's oil demand fared? You know, did the projected strong rebound actually materialize?
Well, at the macro front, China's recovery has been uneven, and the rebound has been less strong than projected by many. Manufacturing activity and the export sector have been lagging behind retail and services. But even retail and services have been weakening in recent months. And China continues to face heightened risks from high local government debt and weak property sector. But interestingly enough, despite these macro issues, the flow of oil data has been strong so far. China's crude oil refinery throughput has jumped to around 14.7 million barrels per day in the first half of 2023. This is around 10% higher than a year ago. This is as a result of rebound in demand driven by the reopening of the economy, the start of new petrochemical plants, and the jump in export of products as margins have improved, but also as refineries benefit from the discounted crude and fuel oil from Russia and Iran. Also, China's crude imports have increased an average 10.6 million barrels per day in the first half, which is around 1 million barrels per day higher than the same period last year. When it comes to oil demand, the demand rebound has been strong, but the unevenness in China's recovery has somehow been reflected in the product demand patterns. For instance, in the first half of 2023, when the economy opened up, we saw a strong rebound in gasoline and jet fuel demand. And this was expected as people started driving and flying again after the lockdowns. China's jet fuel and gasoline demand has recovered to pre-COVID. Also, the demand for fuel oil has been strong. And in part, this has to do with China's independent refineries, which have been importing fuel oil and using it as a feedstock, given that these refineries are subject to tight crude quotas. In contrast, gas oil demand has been relatively weak because, as I mentioned before, the recovery of the manufacturing and export sectors have been more sluggish. And this has prompted Chinese refineries to cut their diesel yields but also to export diesel. As we look into the rest of 2023, the strength in gasoline demand is likely to ease. So the question is really now, what will happen to diesel demand? And here, I think it's important to monitor exports of products out of China, particularly diesel exports in the next few months. It's expected that the government will issue additional export quotas soon. And I think another indicator also to monitor is China's crude stock building. And of course, this is more difficult to monitor because China does not report commercial or strategic inventories. But there have been some reports suggesting that Chinese crude stocks rose in the first half of the year, indicating that part of the increase in crude imports has found its way to storage.
Let's focus now on supply and particularly on OPEC Plus. Bassam, what's been OPEC Plus's response so far to this phase of the cycle then?
In multiple occasions, OPEC and particularly Saudi Arabia have sent a clear signal of their willingness to act preemptively and prevent the market going out of balance. At the same time, they have been sending a clear signal that they will not change course until they see clear and persistent positive signals about the global economy and demand. This is consistent with their cautious approach in a highly uncertain environment. In the June meeting, OPEC Plus combined these two principles of being preemptive and cautious and agree on a supply path for the rest of 2023 and 2024. If one takes into account all the adjustment in output targets and the voluntary cuts, the output ceiling for the OPEC Plus at the start of 2024 will be lower than the start of 2023. Now, this should give the market more transparency about future supply from OPEC Plus. And I think equally important, OPEC Plus took some important decisions, such as the revision of the quotas. They also agreed that all OPEC Plus countries will go through an assessment process by independent bodies to assess the upstream capacities of each OPEC Plus country. Now, all these measures should enhance the cohesion of the group and make its output decisions more effective. But David, at a more fundamental level, I think it's important to recognize that OPEC's approach to market management in this cycle has drastically changed, acting preemptively, not reversing supply quickly until trends are confirmed, also provide some guidance in terms of their medium supply, while maintaining some element of surprise through voluntary cuts. This is a clear departure from previous behavior. In the past, such preemptive and proactive moves were not feasible because the cohesion within OPEC was not strong enough, and it took months or even years to negotiate output cuts. And as a result, OPEC responses always arrived late, only after market balances had already weakened sharply. And this required OPEC to implement deeper cuts for longer periods. Under the Saudi leadership nowadays, OPEC approach to market management has changed, and this is perhaps something which is not yet fully appreciated by some in the market.
But Bassam, you know, has the change in OPEC Plus's policy actually been effective lately? You know, many believe that OPEC Plus's influence on the market has actually been diminished. And also, are these voluntary cuts causing a reduction in revenues for the governments?
When Saudi Arabia made the announcement of additional voluntary cut of 1 million barrels per day and prices remained stuck around $75 level, some were of the view that these cuts are no longer effective in shaping sentiment and balances. But this view proved to be premature as markets recovered quite strongly, as we discussed earlier. Sometimes the market response may be delayed, especially in an environment of high uncertainty and where concerns of recessionary fears are high. Also, the announced cuts of additional 1 million barrels per day started being implemented only in the month of July. So only now we are seeing the effects. Also, David, we don't know the counterfactual. In other words, what would have happened if Saudi Arabia did not announce the additional voluntary cut? But we can estimate the counterfactual under certain assumptions. We have made some estimates, and our results show that without this additional cut, the price would have been lower, and prices would have failed to break above the 70s range on a sustained basis in July and August. Now, David, to your question on revenue, you know, to be able to answer this question, there are certain assumptions one needs to make. First, what would have been the price path before the announcement and implementation of the cuts? Second, compare this price path to the actual price path over a period of time. Now, accounting for the announced additional voluntary cut, we project prices rising in the 85 range on a sustained basis from end of July to end of 2023, compared to a price path in the low 70s without the announced cut. Based on this, our calculations suggest that the gain in revenue due to the higher oil price more than offsets the reduction in revenue due to the output decline by 1 million barrels per day in July, August, and September. And of course, if prices end up higher than 85 in August and September, the net gains in revenue will even be higher. So the argument that Saudi Arabia is worse off from a revenue perspective needs to be really analyzed carefully and must be based on empirical evaluation. But also beyond the issue of revenues, OPEC Plus wanted to send a clear signal that this market is too important to be left to the influence of financial players alone and generally financial sentiment, and to assert the role of producers and physical barrels in shaping market outcomes.
Okay, so what about Russia? You know, it has also, of course, committed to cut its output, but there are doubts on whether Russia's actually been delivering on this pledge. You know, is this not a risk for OPEC Plus cohesion?
Actually, David, the latest data from secondary sources indicate that Russia has reduced its output in line with its announcement back in February to cut output by 500,000 barrels per day. So for the month of July, some of the preliminary data suggest that Russia has reached full compliance. Also, when Saudi Arabia announced the extension of its 1 million barrels per day cut to August, Russia at the same time announced that they will cut supply and exports by 500,000 barrels per day in the same month. The same thing for the month of September, but this time Russia announced a slightly lower number of around 300,000 barrels per day. And the latest data for the month of July also showed that Russian crude exports have declined by more than 800,000 barrels per day from their 3.9 million barrels per day peak in May. And although some of this crude might have been diverted into domestic refineries, the fall in exports has been deeper. All these steps show that Russia is very much in tune with OPEC Plus decisions. And the view that Russia-OPEC relations will break anytime soon, I think this can be put to rest. Also, David, as prices move above the G7 price cap of $60 per barrel, Western shipping companies will no longer be able to have access to financing, insurance, and shipping services from the G7 and EU countries. And this has already prompted some Western fleet operators to withdraw from the Urals trade, which means that Russia would have to rely more on the dark and gray fleet to move its crude around. And this may create additional logistical challenges, though it's not clear how much of the trade of Russian crude still relies on the services from G7 countries. Also, I would add to that that the recent drone strikes in the Black Sea could push insurance premiums higher, or insurers could simply refuse coverage for vessels entering the Black Sea. And this could increase freight rates for tankers carrying Russian oil, and perhaps there will be reluctance of ship owners to lift crude from Russian ports.
We've talked about Russia and Saudi Arabia, but what about the US, of course, the other big player in the oil market? How has US production been faring?
There are two aspects when it comes to US oil. There is the US shale and the US Strategic Petroleum Reserve, or the SPR. Let me start with the US shale. According to the EIA, the US shale in the second quarter recovered above its pre-COVID highs. But at the same time, drilling activity has fallen sharply. And by end of July, drilling activity was down by nearly 100 rigs compared to the start of the year. This suggests that US production growth may slow in the second half of this year. In our latest oil monthly, we forecast total US crude production growth to be halved year on year to 500,000 barrels per day in the second half, compared to 1 million barrels per day in the first half of the year. But at a more structural level, the shift from the previous strategy of maximizing output towards maximizing returns, higher capital discipline, and increased shareholder pressures, all are contributing to making the US shale more financially viable, but more inelastic. The US shale has also become more asymmetric in its response. So when prices rise, the US shale response comes with a lag, and the output growth is moderate. And when prices decline, the response is quicker and sharper. But in addition to the U.S. shale, a key factor that shaped the oil market, especially in 2022, was the U.S. use of its SPR. Just to put this in some context, the U.S. drew down around 220 million barrels from the SPR in 2022. And this was the first time that the U.S. used its SPR for price management. In 2023, the use of SPR has been less of a factor in shaping market outcomes. And if anything, the U.S. has plans to refill the SPR, which could provide additional support to crude. But this has not been going according to plans as prices rose. And just recently, the U.S. administration pulled an offer to buy 6 million barrels of oil for the Strategic Petroleum Reserve as prices have moved above the administration's preferred price target for replenishment.
So, Bassam, let's have kind of one final question, you know. Always kind of, I like the forward-looking question here. You know, where do you see the market kind of moving from here? You know, do you see OPEC Plus changing course as oil prices finally broke the $80 barrier?
Well, David, based on our balances, we see the oil market going into deficit in the second half of this year. And we estimate the deficit at around 1.3 million barrels per day for the second half of this year. But in addition to the physical balances, I believe that there has been a shift in sentiment as there is less pessimism on the state of the global economy. And this should continue to provide support for the oil prices. Our price forecast for Brent stand at $82.5 per barrel for 2023 and $87 per barrel for 2024. Now, regarding your question on OPEC Plus, they signaled multiple times that it's important to wait and confirm trends before changing course on output policy. And I would say currently there are many moving parts shaping the market, and they are not all moving in the same direction, and there are many uncertainties on the macro front. So I think OPEC will continue to stick to a key principles that have served them well so far. And one of those principles is to be cautious, even in a rising market.
Well, Bassam, you know, thank you so much for your time today. As always, I really enjoyed our conversation that updates us all on the current state of the oil market. Now, as I mentioned earlier, the OIS's Global Oil Market Update was published on the 11th of August, 2023. And this, of course, is available on the OIS website. Now, I hope you've all enjoyed listening to this podcast. Thank you and goodbye to everyone.
Thank you for listening to this podcast from the Oxford Institute for Energy Studies. You can find other podcasts, as well as our written research, on our website at www.oxfordenergy.org. If you would like more details about our energy transition, gas, oil, electricity, or China research programs, then please contact us at information@oxfordenergy.org.